Welcome back to Inspired by Interfaith Voices. I'm Umbreen Khan. This week, we're taking a closer look at the work of the Virginia Interfaith Center for Public Policy. As its name suggests, the organization is focused on legislation and working with lawmakers to use the power of the pen and the purse to address a wide-ranging agenda, from efforts to promote paid sick leave and raising the minimum wage to expanding healthcare access for kids of undocumented residents. During their two big outreach days, January 17th, the Day for All People, and February 8th, a student day of action, volunteer leaders gathered to learn, research, and download an app to keep track of conversations with lawmakers and report back to the staff of the center on what they're hearing. But before they went into the offices, hundreds gathered inside St. Paul's Episcopal Church near the Capitol. Inside, a diverse group of leaders speak about faith, values, and the issues they see as critical in this legislative session. Not all speaking were faith leaders. Among them was Reginald Gordon, the CEO and president of the Richmond Memorial Health Foundation. During the opening rally, he made a provocative analogy between slavery and poverty.
So here we are in 2024, and we have people who are mired and shackled in institutional and generational poverty. There is some resident of Virginia right now, today, waiting, hoping, praying that something will happen so they can find a pathway to health and hope and freedom. We can ignore that fact or respond to it. We have systems and structures that perpetuate inequities. There is definitely a role for abolitionists in our current society, poverty abolitionists. Poverty abolitionists remind me of slavery abolitionists. So I submit to you that poverty in 2024 is tantamount to slavery in the U.S. in the 17th, 18th, and 19th centuries. Just as people were stripped of their dignity in slavery, people likewise are stripped of their dignity by poverty today. We, the people in this room, agree that we are joined together in the fight to end poverty so that all people can be free. Harriet Tubman made her way north to freedom, escaping chattel slavery. Once she reached safety and freedom, her spirit was still restless. She boldly and selflessly and with divine protection went back to the South to lead more than 70 family members and friends using the Underground Railroad. The Underground Railroad, as you probably know, was comprised of an interfaith network of congregations, shop owners, houses, people of all races and classes and genders participating in an act of civil disobedience, helping enslaved people gain their freedom that was illegal. Harriet was a conductor, holding up a torch, leading the way to freedom. Much like escaping slavery, the path to climb out of poverty, navigating through systemic and structural barriers intended to preserve the status quo, is arduous. It takes fortitude, it takes a network. And fortunately, we don't have to be underground today as poverty abolitionists. We can gather by the hundreds in a sanctuary in broad daylight on a brisk January morning. We need to be visible and coordinated and above ground. We are each conductors holding up torches along a pathway toward economic freedom. If you have navigated raising children as a single mom and you are now financially stable, or you know an organization that is effective at helping those kind of families, lift up your torch so other women can know the way. If you are a person who's spent years incarcerated and now you are gainfully employed and housed and your rights have been restored, hold up your torch and lead the way for others who have the same story. If you have figured out how to save money and pay rent and utilities on time while taking courses at community college, raise up your torch and lead others toward financial freedom.
In reviewing the bill tracker of the Virginia Interfaith Center, it's very clear that the focus on poverty is a through line that brings together diverse faith communities. It's also an issue that inspires many of its volunteers to act. That is certainly the case for Ann Murphy, a tireless advocate who's been traveling to Richmond from Northern Virginia for nearly two decades. Ann Murphy, welcome to Inspired by Interfaith Voices. It is a pleasure to have you joining me.
Thank you for the invitation.
Just take a moment to describe what you saw when you got off that bus and you were meeting others.
I look forward to this event, Day for All People, every year. I have been attending Day for All People, participating in it, bringing people from Northern Virginia for decades. It's always in the middle of January, and weather is always a concern. And it's a particular concern for me because I usually am the so-called, this is air quotes, bus captain for bringing a bus full of people from Northern Virginia down to Richmond for the event. It's always a very inspiring day. We had 52 this year, which was terrific and better than it has been in most. And when we arrive in Richmond, we meet up with another 250 or 300 other advocates that are on fire for justice. And so one of the joys of the day is to reconnect with friends or acquaintances from throughout the Commonwealth. And this is particularly true of the fact that while I'm a Catholic and I attend and participate in advocacy as a result of my faith commitment, it's a joy to meet up with people like Ali and other members of the Muslim worshiping community, members of the Unitarian churches and other faith traditions, and to recognize that all of us, despite or in spite of perhaps our so-called differences across religious lines, the fact that we are all concerned about justice for all and are willing to put in our time and our energy and our efforts to working together to make that happen. And that's what really inspires me, is to know that I am not in this work by myself. I am not the only one who is interested in the issues and concerned about the potential fate of the legislation that has been raised by our legislators.
It almost sounds like a reunion of sorts.
I think that's true. I like the word reunion. I think that's very much an element of the day, is to reconnect with others and to hear more about their work, especially given the size of the Commonwealth and the fact that people are coming from various areas and have different kinds of concerns than I do here in Northern Virginia.
Tell me a little bit about some of those relationships and what have you learned from them?
So the advocacy piece of it was not so much a surprise, but to learn that through this work with the center, that every faith tradition has concerns about justice, and every faith tradition inspires their members, their participants, their adherents to put in the effort to work to make the world a better place. So whether it's our Jewish friends for whom that's a very integral part of their faith tradition, to our Muslim friends, to people from all kinds of Christian communities, and then those who really, there are people who come who are not part of a faith community, but they are committed to the progressive values that so many of us, or all of us, really adhere to.
As you're describing, you know, that experience of learning about those shared values and seeing and developing those relationships over decades, what was the issue that you found yourself wanting to get on a bus and head to Richmond, you know, decades ago?
I think the poverty and the mitigation of poverty through legal means, through some kind of legislation, you know, poverty pervades people's lives and impacts them in so many different ways. It isn't just that they don't have enough money, for example. It's that housing becomes an issue, medical care becomes an issue, food security becomes an issue. And so with that umbrella of all of those other day-to-day life issues are a part of that. And I think that has been an element for me personally that has always driven me or inspired me to keep on keeping on.
I know that right now one of the pieces of legislation that is being discussed in the State House is on getting Virginia to ensure that there are free lunches and breakfast for all students, recognizing the connection between food and hunger and learning, particularly for young people in the schools. These policy and legal efforts that you're describing are not going to solve the problem in one go. Like, it's not a quick fix.
No, it isn't. Many years ago, there was a legislator in Richmond who represented a part of Alexandria. And I'll never forget that she talked a lot about incrementalism and the fact that you take one step forward, hopefully a giant step. In some years, we have the opportunity to do that. And then there's always a little pushback. And from legislators, from politicians in different parts of the state, in different parts of the Commonwealth. And you just keep working to take that step forward and then to mitigate what happens when the step backwards. And so I think that has provided me with the idea of resilience and the need to just keep working on the issues that are so necessary. And so the example that you raised with free lunches, part of the issue of free lunches, and I think, at least it strikes me this way, is it so reflects the economic gap that exists in this Commonwealth, and particularly for those of us in Northern Virginia who tend to be somewhat more affluent. It doesn't mean that we don't have pockets of poverty, but when you look at the financials, the economic situation of Northern Virginia versus Southwest Virginia and other very rural and parts of the Commonwealth where people are really struggling in deep poverty, the issue of free lunches then for me becomes one that, you know, this is just equitable. This is just fair. And why would we want to punish little children because of the inability of their area to provide adequately for their families?
I hear a lot of attention to systems. Your language and the way you even just described the who is responsible. You know, we live in a time that's really polarized, and you know this better probably than I do. It seems like you have been very, very attentive to justice and equity issues for decades. When you go into a lawmaker's office coming from Northern Virginia, what's the reaction you hear from the staff and from the elected leaders that you met with?
I feel really fortunate to live in an area and in a community here where our elected officials are quite sensitive to just those variances that we just mentioned. And so my question for our legislators is always, how can we help you? You are doing the right thing.
Faith in politics is contested. I know you've been a longtime listener of Interfaith Voices, and I'm sure you recall conversations with my predecessor, Sister Maureen Fiedler, who spent a lot of time looking at the different ways some faith groups participated in politics. Religion in America and religious activism is not monolithic. There's a lot of diversity and even contested questions around what is justice. What is just to some people of faith might not be perceived as a priority to others. Have you encountered that in your work over the years?
Oh, for sure. And I think that's particularly true in the Roman Catholic community, where I worship and where I have been a member for all my life, for all those decades. There are different attitudes about legislation on various issues. But, you know, for the last 10 or 11 years, the Catholic community has had a leader in Rome, Pope Francis, who right from the beginning of his papacy, inspired people like me, who had already been doing advocacy and advocacy for justice. And he really reassured and reaffirmed the Catholic Church's commitment to being engaged in the political process, for recognizing that the changes that are so necessary are systemic. They really are structural. The challenges are not the result of individuals. The challenges are systemic and structural. What has been difficult in this, as you described it accurately, in my opinion, very polarized times, much more so than I can ever remember. We've always had differences with people and with legislators, but generally you felt like you could work with them. That isn't as obvious anymore. So the resilience is all the more necessary. And for me, Pope Francis provides that inspiration and that ability to continue with what I would call the good fight.
You're listening to Inspired by Interfaith Voices. I'm Umbreen Khan. And this week, we've been taking a closer look at the faith-based advocacy of volunteers from a variety of faith traditions who support and champion public policy priorities in the state of Virginia under the auspices and leadership of the Virginia Interfaith Center for Public Policy. Anne Murphy is one of the volunteers who serves as what we'll call the backbone of these outreach efforts. She's been attending the Day for All People lobby days for more than a decade. Inspired by the social justice teachings of her Catholic faith and the model of Pope Francis, Murphy finds the community of advocates that gather in Richmond to be a source of inspiration as they work together to tackle some intractable structural challenges to achieving and building a more equitable society. As we get back to the conversation, she reflects on why the issue of poverty resonates as a priority. Which issues speak most to you?
For me, the whole plethora of legislation that has been submitted, the pieces that most interest me and concern me are those that do deal with families and children and the impact of poverty on them. So the concerns about housing, particularly affordable housing, and the need to really take some action on that, that's an issue that is problematic around the country. And it's particularly problematic here in Virginia. So I would really, that's one of my key kinds of concerns. The whole issue of children, and we talked a little bit about free lunches, but what about health care for all children without regard for whether they were born in this country or born in another country and are living here at this time? Little kids deserve to be immunized and be able to get medications, whether they have the money to afford that or not. I could tell you some personal stories about that one. I'm concerned, very concerned, again, children and people as a result of the proliferation of weapons, guns, the gun violence that is just become so prevalent. Every day we hear the news, we read the stories, we know people who are impacted by gun violence. So any of the legislation around that is a concern. And then this year, the big issue, of course, as it is every 2 years, is the budget. Because you can't find any success with any of these issues if you don't have the money to do it. And so I think that watching what's going on with appropriations, both in the House and the Senate chamber here in Richmond, is very important. And I like to remind advocates that in the long run, so much of what we hope for and work for and advocate for comes down to the black and white dollars and cents. And people need to keep their eye on that.
You are a volunteer with the Virginia Interfaith Center for Public Policy. Did you work as a policy advocate at one point? You're so well-versed in these issues.
Employed for money?
Yes.
No.
No.
Okay. I have not. And I don't work for money now, but any professional work that I did as an adult has been in the area of human resources. Mm-hmm. And I think that gives you a glimpse into people's needs. I have been doing this kind of advocacy work from the 60s. I'm a product of the 60s and the 70s. It was a very churning time in society. And if we think we're churning now and polarized now, people have forgotten what it was like in the 60s during the civil rights movement, in the 70s during the environmental movement, in the middle, late 70s in the feminist movement. Charity and justice, 2 feet, right? And you can't do one without the other. So anybody who's engaged in charitable work, I always encourage them to just ask, and why are people coming to our parish's food pantry, 800 plus households every week? Why are people coming to our clothing store and our parish for what many of us would call simple necessities? There's a large team of people, of which I'm a part, who are assisting 45 refugee families living here in Arlington from Afghanistan, Ukraine, and Venezuela. Why are these people unable to really get established? Why is it taking so long? The question of why points to structures and to systems. And that's where you see the flaws in the way we live.
Ann Murphy is a volunteer with the Virginia Interfaith Center for Public Policy and resides in Northern Virginia. Since the legislative session began, the Virginia Interfaith Center for Public Policy has been tracking bills that cover a host of issues. Visit this week's show notes for links to the organization and its bill tracker, including a fact sheet on the use of attack dogs in Virginia prisons. That's all for this week's show. This week's producer is Kevin McCarthy. A special thanks to our founder, Maureen Fiedler. To learn more about this program, visit interfaithradio.org. you can take us on the go. Just visit the pod streaming app of your choice and search Interfaith Voices. Wherever you are, friends, I hope you are safe. I hope you are well, and I hope you stay connected. I'll see you next week.